be polite. You said you had a message? He raised a palm in the air as he made his way out. Oh, yeah. I almost forgot. I've got the number of a potential client who insists that he'll only deal with you. Me? I said, frowning. I've not even started yet. I guess word's gotten around. He said you and him go way back. Hopkins rummaged in his inside suit pocket and pulled out a slip of notepaper. I tried to poach him, but he insisted he'd only speak to you. I raised an eyebrow at his shamelessness, curious as to the identity of my mystery client. You can't blame me for trying. Flashing me a smile, Hopkins handed me a folded slip of paper. His name's Luke Priestwood. Ring any bells? Chapter 24. Luke. 2002. Morrissey sang a haunting melody from my car stereo system. The more someone ignored him, the closer he got. It was my favorite track from the playlist I had compiled. I loved nothing more than creeping into Emma's thoughts. Had she battled with her conscience? Such a good, caring girl, lying to her father and sneaking out of her room. Had the thoughts of our secret meeting kept her awake at night? It was convenient, Emma living in such an isolated spot in the countryside. Far from the glare of CCTV, and with her nearest neighbor a mile away, I could pretty much get up to anything I wanted. I was no stranger to subterfuge. You couldn't exactly call my new Ford Fiesta a passion wagon. The most exciting thing about it was the tinted windows I had insisted upon when it was ordered from the dealership. Sean Talbot, my friend and fellow teacher, called it the Granny Cruiser. It was all right for him to laugh. He owned a sportier motor far superior to mine. That's what happens when your mum pays for your car. You end up with something solid and sensible. Still, for as long as she was willing to throw money at me, I was prepared to take it. I smiled as I reread the texts on my phone, glad to be making some progress at last. Emma. About the other day, I meant what I said. Text me. XXX. Emma. Is it something I've done? Have I upset you? If so, I'm sorry. XXX. Emma. Need to talk. XXX. Luke. Sorry. Didn't mean to upset you. That's the last thing I want. Sad face. Emma. Can't stop thinking about you. Please call. XXX. Luke. I only want what's best for you. XXX. Emma. I'm almost 16. A grown woman. Please. Can we meet? XXX. Emma. I'm free tonight. Are you about? XXX. Emma. Please. XXX. Luke. East Road on the junction of Ivy Lane at 9 tonight. Be discreet. X. Emma. I will. See you then. XXX. I checked my watch. 5 to 9. My car was tucked in behind the high ditch that afforded the neighboring house some privacy. Not that I wanted to be peering in through their windows. Tonight was about discretion. The last thing I wanted was to draw attention to myself. Still, I couldn't help but feel a surge of anticipation as the flicker of the light on Emma's bicycle blinked in the distance. I knew she would be feeling it too. After tucking her bike away next to the hedge, she hopped into the passenger seat beside me. Her face was flushed from the exertion of pedaling, and she pushed the hood of her jacket down from her face.
I'm boiling,
she panted, smiling in a sweaty apology.
But I thought it best to wear a hood, so I wouldn't be seen.
Plucking open the buttons of her blue coat, she revealed a knee-length tweed skirt with thick black tights and a black V-neck top underneath. I had to physically force my eyes away from her body, though she seemed oblivious to the stirrings she had caused. She looked at me in earnest as she shrugged off her coat, rolled it up and pushed it into the footwell. Her top gaped open as she leaned forward, and I almost had to sit on my hands not to jump her there and then. Talk about a body meant for sin. Hers was positively iniquitous. "Phone," I said eventually, reaching out my hand. She handed it over without question, used to this part of our routine. After deleting the last text, I handed it back to her. "You wanted to talk," I said, diverting my gaze through the window as my trousers began to feel a bit too tight. Emma reached for me without a moment's hesitation and touched me on the arm.
"I've been thinking about what you said. I want to be with you. Properly."
"I don't know," I said. "It could land us both in a lot of trouble. Can I rely on you to keep it a secret?"
"Yes, sir,"
Emma nodded enthusiastically, brushing an errant strand of wavy black hair from across her face. I responded with a laugh. "I think we're beyond you calling me sir, don't you? I'm Luke, unless we're in school." Emma nodded, her fingers clasped tightly around her knees.
"I'll do whatever you ask. You're the only person I trust. I'd never let you down."
Despite her mild perspiration, she smelled sweet. I turned on the aircon, giving us both a chance to cool down. Finally, I met her gaze. "I never wanted any of this," I lied. "But sometimes you just can't help who you fall for." I almost felt sorry for her, the way all her emotions were laid bare. It was as if she had been waiting her whole life for someone to tell her they loved her. She reached over and threw her arms around me, excitement bubbling to the surface in her words.
"I feel the same way. You can trust me, you know that. I won't tell a soul."
I pulled away, attempting a look of concern.
"Are you sure? Really sure you're ready for a serious relationship?" "Yes,"
she whispered, her long dark lashes inches from mine.
"But I hardly know anything about you. I'd like to find out more."
"And you will," I said, another lie. Leaning in, I gently kissed her, introducing my tongue. Slowly we parted. Her eyes flickered over my face, and I knew she was looking for any signs of me getting cold feet. There was no chance of that happening. Not now we had taken it this far.
"You'd better get home before it gets too late," I said, keeping her hanging on a few seconds more. "Can we meet again?" she said, bending over to reach for her coat on the floor.
I helped her pick it up, brushing my hand against her legs.
"Soon. But remember what I said. We've got to be discreet if we're going to make this work. Don't let me down." "You can count on me,"
she breathed, boldly leaning over to kiss me one more time before making her way into the night. I smiled. Everything had gone as planned. It had been worth the wait, and I had something even better in store.
Chapter 25. Alex. 2017.
I stood rooted to the spot as Hopkins left. All I could hear was my breathing, the sounds of city life muffled by the thick panels of glass behind me. Luke Priestwood. My stomach clenched as I made the connection. Luke Priestwood was the name of Emma's stalker. I had wheedled it out of her the night she confessed. Only this morning I had called a private detective to see if I could track him down. Now it appeared that I might not need to. But that was too crazy, wasn't it? It couldn't be the same person. How could he have found me? And why say we were old friends? There couldn't be that many Luke Priestwoods around, could there? I remembered how she had described him. Tall, sandy brown hair. Handsome. I paced my office, no longer seeing the view as I recalled my wife's account. I pressed my palms on my desk, the surface cool on my skin as I slowly exhaled. Calm down.
It might be nothing. Just ring the guy and see what he wants, I whispered to myself. But the truth grasped at my throat like cold fingers of dread. Was he just fucking with me? How did he know I was here? Like a metronome, my thoughts ticked back and forth as I struggled to take it all in. If this were the same Luke Priestwood who had stalked Emma, then I would find out when I called. But what would I say? So you're the guy my wife tried to kill. What's it like coming back from the dead? Standing over my desk phone, I thought about ringing Emma, telling her what I had found. As my fingers hovered over the dial, I thought about the consequences of such a knee-jerk reaction. She was miles away, where I could not help her. Fighting her eating disorder was taking all of her strength. This could tip her over the edge. And there was Jamie to consider. If by some miracle this was the same Luke Priestwood, then at least he was a safe distance from Emma. I replaced the receiver. Tonight, I would ring him, and, if he was willing, arrange to meet him after work. Best case scenario would be that he wanted to clear the air. Worst case scenario, if he tried to call the police now, we would just deny everything. Against Emma's wishes, I had visited the alleged burial site, digging a few feet into the disturbed earth. There had been no sign of a body. It had come as no surprise because her story bothered me. There was something about it that did not ring true. If she wouldn't open up, then perhaps her sister would. I stared out of the window at the view that now seemed drab and grey. The beginnings of a headache wrapped itself around me. There was nothing I could do but call the man and see what he wanted. As my intercom buzzed, I took a deep breath, keeping my tone light as I tried to disguise the dread that I felt inside. After a short exchange, Alice allowed the IT people inside. I watched as they set me up on the system and explained how it all worked. Personnel files, statistics, and monthly reports were all at the tips of my fingers. Having command of my own team was something I had worked hard for all of my life. I thought of my family and the future I had planned. I could not lose this now.
Chapter 26, Emma, 2017. Put the kettle on, will you? Teresa said, turning the sign on the door to closed. I've got some nice cream buns in the fridge. I opened my mouth to say I wasn't hungry, but her withering glance silenced my protests as she joined me in the staff room. I filled the kettle with tap water, using it to give our thirsty plants a drink. Filling it again, I clicked it on and pulled two mugs from the shelves. As I busied myself making our drinks, Teresa's voice washed over me. Don't even try to tell me you've eaten. I've been listening to your stomach growling all morning. You're not leaving until you've finished that bun. If only she knew. Eating was only half the battle. The real struggle lay in keeping it down. I gave her a cramped smile. My sister had a way of telling it like it was. Here, she said, pushing the offending cream bun before me as I sat down with our teas. My brain immediately made the calculations. 308 calories in a Morrison's cream bun plus a cup of tea with sugar and skimmed milk. I rounded it off to 350. I would need to run 3.5 miles before I had even taken a bite, unless I vomited, which would take seconds. It was a no-brainer, I thought, knowing my sister would watch me as I ate. Look at those dark rings under your eyes. When's the last time you had a decent night's sleep? You look terrible. Thanks, I laughed, temporarily forgetting my problems. Whereas you look sickeningly well. And she did. I was all too conscious of her forthcoming divorce, but she seemed to be taking it in her stride. We should have lunch together more often, she said with a grin. It does wonders for my self-confidence. Now eat up. I can't have my little sister being skinnier than me. I wondered if the cake were worth the sacrifice that I would have to make later. My throat was still raw from my last bout of vomiting. It was too soon for another purge. I glanced down at my clothes, remembering the days when I used to secrete food in my pockets. Somehow I didn't think my vintage winter dress coat would stand up to hiding a cream bun. But 10 minutes of watching me pick at my food must have been too much for Teresa to bear. Having long finished her bun, she leaned forward and took both my hands. "Sis, I know there's more to this than you not eating. What is it? You've not been yourself all day." My eyes dropped to the table, and I cursed my inability to hide my distress. Normally I was good at concealing things, but on top of my confession to Alex, the flowers and silent phone calls were proving too much. "It's nothing," I said, unable to meet her gaze. "No judgment," she said, squeezing my hands. It was what she said to me in the early days when she was helping me through my bulimia. Such expressions of love made me want to cry. I shrugged, swallowing back the words on my tongue. My bulimia was one thing. How could I tell my sister what I had done? "I've relapsed. Only once. I'm trying to keep it under control." Our oversized wall clock ticked away the seconds, and I took a deep breath, gathering the strength I needed to continue. "Right, what are we going to do about it?" Teresa jumped straight in, interrupting my flow. "Do you want me to see if we can get you back in touch with your counselor? Maybe see the doctor?" Her thoughts switched. I could almost see the cogs in her brain. This was how Teresa solved problems, flitting from one thought to another until she came up with the appropriate response. "Is it the move? Alex's new job? Is everything going too fast?" I shook my head. "Hardly. It's taken him years to persuade me to go." I met her eyes, and I knew that she would not give up unless I gave her something to go on. "The problem's not with Alex. It's me. Sometimes it feels like I'm being watched. The phone calls, the flowers. I'm scared that Luke is back." Teresa's lips thinned at the mention of Luke's name. She was one of the few people immune to his charms. It made me value our relationship all the more. So why couldn't I tell her what I had done? Because I knew it was wrong. What I did, what I thought I'd done, was commit murder. Even if Luke hadn't died, it was what I had intended at the time. "Has he been in touch?" she said, scrutinizing my face for the answer. I shrugged, knowing how vague I sounded. "No, not exactly. I was in the bathroom the other night, and I know this is going to sound crazy, but I thought I saw him through the window. Then there are the silent phone calls and now the flowers. I'm feeling so panicky, and I don't know what to do." "Oh, sis. Have you told Alex?" I nodded. "He wants us to concentrate on moving to Leeds." Teresa frowned, her protective streak clearly evident. "Alex is right. If you see Luke or feel afraid, just call me. I don't want you speaking to him. It's not safe. As long as you promise not to report it to the police." The very thought made me nervous. They were the last people I wanted involved. "Promise me, Teresa. No police. It'll only aggravate things, and I've got no proof." "Okay, okay," she said, waving the palms of her hands in mock surrender. "But you've got to stay in control of your eating. The more you panic, the worse things get. You've too much to lose. Your health, your husband, little Jamie, he needs you. They both do. Please, Emma, eat something, for their sakes." "I'm fully aware of what I stand to lose," I snapped, her crestfallen expression making me regret my tone. "I'm sorry," I said. "I didn't mean to have a go." "Hey, it's me you're talking to," she said, giving me a kinder smile than I deserved. "Remember what I was like when I found out Charles was carrying on behind my back? I was in a right state, and you helped me through it. Working here in the shop, it's given me something to focus on. I don't know what I would have done without you." I nodded. In the circumstances, it was the least I could have done. Thanks to the prenup, Charles had left her virtually destitute, yet he had been the one in the wrong. I pushed the cream bun in her direction. "You have this. If I start, I'll never stop. I've got some leftover salad in the fridge. I'll have that instead. I can stay with you, if you like, until Alex gets back. Teresa's voice was muffled as she took another bite. I envied her ability to eat whatever she wanted without putting on a pound. Not that it would have made a difference to me. I was never happy, no matter what size or shape I was. I'm okay, I said, checking the time. I just had a bad night. I've got rid of all the junk food in the house. Nothing for me to binge on there. But the expression on Teresa's face told me she was not convinced. And the face in the window? Aren't you worried about that? I was, more than she could ever know. I didn't know which was more frightening, the thought that Luke had been to my home, or the prospect that I was losing my mind.
Chapter 27 Alex 2017 In the former Market Man's pub, the smell of Theakston's ale carried me back to the days when I sat here with my father. He had brought me here on my 18th birthday to proudly buy me my first pint. I didn't much like the taste of it back then, but now that I was a father myself, I had come to understand the importance of the ritual. I could almost feel his presence as I sat amongst the shiny copper fixtures. Situated in Leeds city centre, Whitelock's location gave it an oldie-worldie feel and a unique charm. I could almost hear my father's voice, telling me to drink up as he set the world to rights. A pang of grief touched my soul. I wished he were here to advise me. But I was the man of the house now, and tonight I had to be strong. Perhaps that was why I had texted Luke Priestwood instead of ringing and asked him to meet me here, in a public place. A small part of me hoped my dad would be here in spirit, providing me with some much-needed moral support. Could the person I was meeting be the same man who had terrorized my wife? I had to know. But how on earth was I going to broach the subject? I raised my glass to my lips. Alcohol was a good tongue-loosener. And after the week I'd had, I needed a drink or two. Thoughts of Emma floated into my mind, and I found myself dialing her number. Everything okay? I'm just ringing to say goodnight to Jamie.
Oh, I'm sorry, hun. He's fast asleep,
Emma said, her voice light and cheerful.
He didn't have an afternoon nap, so he went down early. I'll tell him you called when he wakes up in the morning. How's things?
Great. You should see my new office. It's three times bigger than my old one, and has cracking views of the city. I can't wait for you to get here. I smiled, pressing my hand against my ear to drown out the noise of my fellow drinkers.
I've started packing some stuff already. Are you out? Sounds like you're in a pub.
Just having a few drinks with my new colleagues. They're a good bunch. I won't stay out too long. We both danced around the elephant in the room. I wanted to ask if anything else had happened to make her worry, and if she had eaten today. But if she hadn't, she was hardly likely to tell me over the phone. I sighed, feeling the distance between us.
Enjoy yourself. You deserve it. I love you,
she said, and I was just about to respond when my eyes were drawn to the door. Somehow, I knew the man who had just walked in was Luke Priestwood. Looking from left to right, his eyes scanned the pub as he tried to find me. He was slightly shorter than me, with light chestnut hair. I found myself sizing him up, assessing his strength. He was sinewy but not as broad as me. I could take him if I had to. I caught his eye, desperate to end my call. It felt wrong, talking to Emma while I was doing this. If he was the person I thought he was, then the last thing I wanted was Emma hearing his voice. I've got to go. I'll see you tomorrow. It was only after I'd hung up that I realized I had forgotten to say I loved her too. There was no time to dwell, though, as he joined me. Mr. Priestwood, is it? I said cautiously, bracing myself as I rose from my seat. For all I knew, the guy could be ready to pull a knife on me. My muscles tensed. I was ready for him if he tried. But his expression was not that of someone who wanted to fight. He shuffled nervously before me, dipping his hand into his jacket pocket and pulling out his wallet.
It is. Can I get you a drink?
No, thanks, I said, pointing to my half-empty pint glass. I felt guilty enough just talking to him, never mind accepting drinks. I eyed him up as he leaned against the old-fashioned wooden bar. He was dressed casually in jeans and a jacket, his shirt pressed. Despite having been neatly folded, my Lacoste shirt still had creases from my overnight bag. I caught myself. Why was I comparing myself to this man? Because I was jealous of his former relationship with my wife. Had there been a relationship? From how Emma had described it, she had been easy prey. A pint was laid in front of me, snapping me out of my thoughts. Luke delivered a half smile. I asked the barman for the same again. I figured we might be here for some time. I nodded, unable to bring myself to thank the man before me. What's this all about? I said, before his backside had rested on his seat. Because you didn't contact me to buy property, did you?
No, Luke sighed. It's a long story, one with a sting in the tail.
He sank back a mouthful of his pint.
I've not come here to make trouble. I've told myself a million times to walk away, but then I heard Emma was moving to Leeds.
I don't understand, I said. I felt my grip tighten around my glass. Our meeting was getting more surreal by the minute. Just what was going on?
I live in New York, Luke said. But sometimes I come to Leeds.
Why did you call me? Why don't you get to the point? I said, my anger simmering beneath the surface. It was difficult to equate the man before me with the person Emma had described. He looked harmless, like any bloke down the pub. How could this be the man Emma had been driven to kill? Something awful must have happened to push her to such an extreme. I lowered my gaze, determined to keep my emotions in check.
I used to be her schoolteacher years ago, but I imagine she's told you that. Judging by the way you're glaring at me, I expect that's where the truth ended.
I raised an eyebrow, trying to relax my facial muscles as they tightened around my frown. Luke gave a nervous laugh, raising his palms in mock surrender.
Mate, I come in peace. It's not what you think.
What do you expect? I said. You've come here to relive your sick infatuation with my wife. Should I go to the jukebox and play Don't Stand So Close to Me? I exhaled tersely. I had to distance myself if I wanted to hear him out. Luke raised a cautionary finger.
There's a lot of truth in that song, especially when it ended with me almost being killed. Seriously, I'm trying to help you here, but if you're not ready to hear it, then I'll go.
Stay where you are, I said, swallowing back the bitter taste in my mouth. Tell me everything you know. There was no doubt now. He was talking about attempted murder. He was talking about my wife.
Chapter 28, Emma, 2017. It wasn't that I hated being alone. For most of my life, I'd preferred my own company, particularly when I was growing up in Mersey. But having three small bedrooms in close proximity did not offer much privacy. Every argument, every outspoken word could be heard. Our windswept bungalow jutted out of the landscape like a jagged thumbnail. Not many people wanted to live this far out, let alone on an island regularly cut off by the tide. I did not doubt that moving away would be the best thing for our son. He would miss the beach and the raw freedom of his surroundings, but I knew he would delight in our new home. I wanted him out there in the big wide world, but I wanted to be by his side, too. The thought of being separated haunted my nightmares with terrifying lucidity. I did not deserve my beautiful child. Since confiding in Alex, I had wrestled with my conscience. But I was not a character from a horror story. Perhaps I was not even a killer, after all. A miserable growl emanated from my stomach. I hadn't eaten, apart from some salad Teresa had guilt-tripped me into, and a chocolate digestive, which I had taken a bite from, and then spat out in the bin. Hunger distracted me from my thoughts. Teresa would never understand. For once, our house was steeped in serenity. The only sounds were the grandfather clock in the hall and the soft hiss and crackle as damp logs burned in the hearth. Alex always filled the void with the mundane chatter of a television show. Coming from the city, he had never gotten used to country life. I breathed in deeply, inhaling the scent of the pine cones I had picked with Jamie days before. I ran my hand along the long wooden beam my father had fitted years ago. It had been replaced after the fire. I thought about that day, how I'd hugged my knees as the flames danced around me. It was my father who had found me. Another horrific episode I wished I could forget. I stared into the fire, my memories cracking open like festering eggs, the stink within leaking out. Alex had said that my nightmares were my subconscious mind trying to deal with what I repressed. If only he knew. Was I a product of my social environment, or was I just born like this? I tried to think about Mum, to use my adult brain to analyze what sort of a person she really was. I'd been 13 when she'd left. I focused hard, visualizing her face, the memory blurred around the edges. I clung on tightly to the memories of her good days when she was sober and Dad was around. Picnics at the beach, crabbing in the water, her skin freckled from the sun when we stayed out too long. But then there were the bad days when she was feeling neglected, when she drank too much and her moods raged like a storm. She was stick-thin, unlike most of the mothers who picked up their children from school. I used to watch them, in their chunky knitted jumpers and padded coats, welcoming their children with warm hugs. I cycled home on my own from an early age. I withdrew from the heat of the fire, thinking of the past wasn't helping. I had to move forward, move away, and forget this place. Picking up the poker, I jabbed at the logs, watching the sparks dance as they were sucked up the chimney and released into the violent winds. A sharp rap made me jump, and the poker clanged against the hearth as it fell at my feet. I held my breath, wondering if I had imagined it. Perhaps it was the crack of a log that misguided my senses into thinking it was someone at the door. We did not get callers this far out. It was after 9. And Jamie was tucked up in bed. So who could be outside? I waited, crouching down to pick up the poker once more. Crack! My head swiveled to the left as something hit the window pane, making me freeze in my tracks. I had locked the doors, hadn't I? What about the windows? Were they closed too? My heart galloping in my chest, I rushed towards the glass, half expecting to see Luke peering through. It was just the storm, I told myself. Some debris had hit the door and was rattling the windows. But I didn't really believe that was true. After checking the locks, I stood in Jamie's doorway, watching his sleeping form. My heart melted at the sound of his soft snore. What sort of a mother was I when I could not keep my son safe? It had started. I was certain of it. Luke was back and determined to reenact what had happened before. It would not be enough that he had invaded my mind. He would invade my home also. But it was not just me who would be put in harm's way this time. My family would suffer too. The sharp ring of the telephone made me grasp the doorframe. Tearing myself away, I forced myself to answer it, holding my breath as I awaited a response. But just as I expected, There was nobody there. At least, nothing except the faint sound of breathing on the other side. I ended the call and took the phone off the hook, checking the doors and windows one more time before peeping in on Jamie and going to bed. Around me, the house creaked and moaned in response to the gale outside. Taking a breath, I steadied myself. I could not give in to panic, not now. My fingers found the back of my neck, easing down the hairs that had prickled with fright. Bending on one knee, I checked beneath the bed, ready to shoot out of the room at a second's notice. There was nothing there, but I knew that may not always be the case. "No," I whispered, stumbling backwards as the walls closed in around me. The last thing I could feel were my knees hitting the carpet as I fell to the floor.
Chapter 29. Alex, 2017. Luke lowered the phone from his ear and slid it into the pocket of his jeans. I'd half expected him not to return from the toilet, and I watched his face closely for clues of his intentions. "Girlfriend?" I asked, half hoping it was. I was conscious of the time. Soon the barman would call last orders, and Luke had not told me why he had contacted me. Each time he was about to open up, we were faced with an interruption. Was he stringing me along, or had booze addled his brain? "Don't talk to me about girlfriends," he said, taking a sip of his drink. My thoughts darkened. I wanted to confront him, squeeze it out of him if necessary with my bare hands. I wasn't buying the nice guy act. If he had hurt Emma, then he would pay. I tipped my glass to my lips, barely sipping my drink. Alcohol brought out the worst of my temper, and going off the rails was not going to help anyone. My mother's saying floated in my memory, "You'll catch more flies with honey than vinegar." She was always telling me off for my scowl, said if the wind changed that I'd stay that way. But she was right about one thing. I needed to keep my temper in check. Our area of the pub had cleared of patrons, and I was relieved that I could hear him without having to shout. "You were about to tell me about that, weren't you?" Luke nodded. "Sorry. This is hard for me to talk about. But you need to know who you're married to." I forced a nod. I wanted to tell him he wasn't worthy to utter Emma's name. "She said you were her teacher. Just how far did your relationship go?" It was the question I had wanted to ask my wife. I knew she was trying to protect my feelings, but keeping me in the dark was hurting me more. "Too far," Luke said. "And I put my hands up to that. I was newly qualified, just a few years older than the class I taught. But I should have known better. Emma was your typical love-struck teenager. She was infatuated with me, there at every turn." "You're having me on," I said, my throat growing dry. He shook his head, a half-smile rising on his face. "She told you it was me, didn't she? Figures. That's the line she fed everyone." Lowering his voice, he tipped his head towards mine. "She followed me everywhere I went. Constantly texted me and gave me the eye. I was flattered. Who wouldn't be? This attractive young woman coming on to me. She wouldn't take no for an answer." I stared in disbelief, while inside, my stomach kept turning over. He was talking about my Emma. He was lying. He had to be. And what the hell was I doing, betraying my wife by buying her stalker drinks? She would be mortified if she could see us now. But I needed to hear what he had to say. I sucked in a breath. "So you slept together?" Luke nodded. "I gave in to temptation just once. She was a very troubled girl. I thought I was helping when she opened up to me. But she formed an attachment. They warned us about stuff like this, but... ugh,
I was very naive. One day she followed me to my dad's beach hut. She made a pass at me and we got carried away. He caught my tight-lipped expression. I won't go into details, but I told her it could never happen again. I sat quietly fuming at the thought of her with another man. Would she have been that forward at 16? Her youth was something she didn't like talking about, and pressing her for answers just caused upset. I couldn't help but wonder whether we might not have found ourselves in this situation if she had been more open about her past. Luke was feeding me an entirely different story than the one I had been given. If he was talking about Emma, it was not the woman I had come to know. I backed off immediately, Luke said remorsefully. To be honest, I couldn't believe what we'd done, but it was too late by then. My cheeks flushed as I manufactured a response. What do you mean, too late? God, even thinking about her gives me the chills, Luke said, giving me a furtive glance. She became my shadow after that. Then the phone calls started, day and night. When I wouldn't respond, she broke into my house. I had to get a police injunction against her in the end. He gave a dry laugh. 'Cause she was like the Terminator. The injunction slowed her down, but it couldn't stop her. It must have escalated quickly if she tried to kill you. I gave him a cold smile. I hated hearing him talk about Emma in that way. He was lying, so I'd turn on my wife. I stared unblinkingly ahead, allowing his words to flow over me. Luke carried on as if he had not heard me. She became really nasty. Told everyone that I'd pressured her into sex. It was her word against mine. Rumors started flying about and my contract was cut short. It was very hard to get anywhere to employ me because they wouldn't give me a reference. My teaching career was in tatters before it began. I'm surprised you didn't go to prison for sleeping with someone in your care, I said, showing little sympathy. There was no proof, and believe me, I've paid the price. All those years in university and the best I can get is a job in an art gallery on minimum wage. My eyes fell to his left hand, which had clenched into a fist. He caught my gaze and stretched his fingers before wrapping his hands around his pint glass. So you're bitter, and maybe you've called me here for some sort of closure. But Emma's no threat to you. How do you explain this, then? He turned away from me, parting the back of his hair. I peered beneath the dim light at the raised scar on the back of his head, and felt a sudden surge of dread. I frowned. But you said you moved away. You must have come back at some point. Luke nodded slowly, lost in thought. I missed my family. I wanted to be able to go home without worrying it would start up again. I came back for a while, but I was still looking over my shoulder. So I decided to find her, confront her about what she'd done. Luke's finger trailed after the dribble of condensation on his glass. I followed her home one day. I guess I wanted to see how she'd feel if the tables were turned. 10 minutes after getting there, she tied a shovel to her quad bike and rode to the paddock at the back of the house. I remember standing in the field watching her, trying to gather up enough courage to confront her for what she'd done. It seemed daft, being afraid of a woman. But deep down, I knew things had the potential to get worse. He took another swig of his beer before carrying on. And they did. She began screaming and shouting at me as if I was the one in the wrong. I turned to leave, but the next thing I was falling to my knees as I took a blow to the head. So you're saying she purposely tried to kill you? I said, confirming my worst fears. That it wasn't self-defense on her part. Self-defense? How could it be self-defense when I was walking away? Luke looked at me, his eyes wide with incredulity. When I woke up, I was covered in branches and a layer of dirt. At first, everything was black, and I didn't know where I was. The soil, It was everywhere. It blurred my eyes and was up my nose. The insects, crawling all over me they were. They must have smelled the blood coming from my head. He heaved a ragged sigh. I managed to claw my way up and crawled out of the ditch. I was weak. My head was spinning. Scared the shit out of me, it did. I left after that and didn't look back. "Did you call the police?" I said, knowing full well he hadn't. I knew it would aggravate things, and again it was her word against mine. I just wanted to put the whole thing behind me. So I covered the ground in, made it look like I was still there. I figured if she thought she'd killed me, then she'd leave my family and me alone. They knew what she was like, so when I went to York, they promised to keep my whereabouts quiet. I realized he was staring at me, waiting for me to speak. "Sounds like something out of a Stephen King novel." "Well, it's nothing to be proud of, being beaten up by a woman." A smile touched his lips, but his blue eyes were cold. "You're talking to a dead man." He knocked back his drink, slamming the empty glass against the table. In the distance, a bell rang time. "I'm not saying I believe any of this, but what do you want from me?" I said, as the few remaining drinkers made their way to the bar. Luke masked a belch with his hand. "I thought about moving again, after I heard you were coming to Leeds. But I'm tired of hiding. I want to be able to move freely, without worrying what Emma's going to do next. I could still go to the police, but I prefer not to. In return for my silence, I want you to speak to her. Tell her that I don't want her coming to the art gallery. If she sees me out and about, she's to steer well clear." "I'll speak to her," I said, "when the time is right. But it works both ways. If I see you anywhere near my wife, I'll finish what she started." Luke rose from his seat, his expression neutral. "You don't need to worry about that. The only reason I've kept tabs on Emma is to make sure she's nowhere near me." "Then we understand each other," I said, touching his arm as he turned to leave. "Just one more thing. When you came back to see her, when was that?" "The date's branded on my brain," he said. "October 2013. Chapter 30, Luke, 2002. My phone dinged with another text, and I did not have to look at the screen to know who it was. My siren, my temptress, my Emma. She was still sulking as I hadn't mentioned her birthday the day before. Little did she know how much importance I had placed on her age. Silencing the engine, I plucked my phone from my pocket as I got out of the car. Whatever she texted, my response would be instant. This was not the time to be coy. "Emma. Everything okay? Sorry for being off with you. X." Luke. "Silly. I can't treat you differently in school. XX. Emma. Smiley face. XXX. Emma. Okay, I forgive you. Heart shape. XXX. Luke. Can't stop thinking about you. X. Emma. When can we meet? It's been ages. You promised. XXX. Sad face. Luke. I'm here, waiting, and I've got your present. Smiley face. Emma. Oh? Where are you? XX. Luke. Wouldn't you like to know? XX. Emma. Where? Tell me now. XXX. Luke. At Dad's beach hut in Mersey. Remember where I told you? X. Emma. Yes, I'll be there in 20. XXXXX. I had already primed Emma by telling her about the place last week. She made it there in 30 minutes flat. I knew it was her from the on-off flicker of the light on her bike. It was late and the beach had long since cleared of dog walkers, the tang of salt on the cool, crisp November air. I had dangled the carrot. There would be nobody else here tonight, just as I had planned. She found me sitting in the beach hut, apparently unaware of her arrival. "Oh," I said, opening the door. "I wasn't sure if you were coming."
"I wasn't sure myself,"
she said, panting lightly as she stood in the doorway.
"Dad kept talking about some boring archaeology find on the news. In the end, I said I was going to bed. I climbed out the window to get away."
I chuckled in response, telling her to come inside. Dad's beach hut was sparse but fit for purpose, housing a small gas cooker, a square wooden table, some cupboards and two chairs. Deck chairs were stacked in the corner behind the door, as well as some sandy buckets and spades that had not been discarded by our neighbor's children when they'd used it for the day. I could not do much about the lack of heating, but I had cleared away any lingering cobwebs. In my experience, the appearance of spiders did not set a romantic tone. "I'm sorry about before," I said, offering a lazy smile as I gave her the once-over. She was wearing a baggy sweatshirt and denim skirt. I imagined the twilight breeze skimming the tops of her thighs as she cycled here to meet me in our secret meeting place.
"You were only looking out for me," she said, catching my gaze.
I met her eye and smiled. I could not wait forever. Soon we would be breaking up for Christmas, and who knows how we would feel when the new term began.
"Your present."
I broke the silence by digging into my jacket pocket. The necklace was some cheap tat I'd picked up from the market, but she wasn't to know. I stood behind her to put it on, before she had the chance to have a better look. She could examine it later, when it didn't matter anymore.
"Oh, it's lovely,"
she said, touching the tiny sunflower dangling from the chain. A trickle of sweat ran down my back, but, given the cool night, it was Emma making me perspire.
"Are you sure this is what you want?"
I said.
"Really sure?"
Her attention on her necklace, she gave me an inquiring look, and it took several seconds for the penny to drop.
"Now,"
she said, her words barely a whisper, and for a second I almost felt guilty for pushing her so fast. Almost.
"Hey, don't look so scared," I said softly. "Us, meeting like this, perhaps it was a mistake."
I made my way towards the door.
"Wait,"
she said, blocking my path. Leaning forward, she kissed me on the cheek.
"Don't go."
Turning around, she closed the door and pulled across the bolt. The air seemed charged between us, and I parted my lips as my breath quickened in her presence. She knew why she had been summoned. Nobody had forced her to come. Her earlier sulk in school would have stoked a feeling of guilt that she would be keen to dissolve. I reached forward, pulling the elastic band from her hair and allowing it to tumble down onto her shoulders. She gazed at me with a trust I did not deserve.
"I love you,"
she whispered, and it did not come as a surprise. It seemed only fair I should reciprocate, as saying anything less could put a dampener on what was to come.
"I feel the same. You're the only one for me," I said,
and at that moment it was true. Pressing my lips upon hers, I kissed her hungrily on the mouth, my hands claiming her face, her neck, her shoulders. Her eyes were misty when we drew back for air, and I questioned her a second time.
"Are you sure? Really sure?" I said,
and felt a swell of satisfaction when she replied with a sudden nod of the head.
"You haven't done this before, have you?"
I said, stilled by the fear lighting up her eyes.
"It's what I want, more than anything,"
she replied. And that was how we progressed from our first kiss to something so much more.
Chapter 31, Emma, 2002. Cyclone Cycling home from the beach hut, I struggled to see the road. I didn't know why I was crying. My relationship with Luke had been sealed. We were a couple. It was too late to turn back now. I blinked hard in order to clear my vision. My tears were hot with frustration and shame. I had wanted Luke to treat me as an adult, and he had. I wanted to keep him, and this way I would. Nobody had put a gun to my head. So why did I feel so used? Slipping into my room, I quickly undressed before pulling my long white nightdress over my head. Teresa had not followed up on my mention of meeting my teacher out of school, and there was no way I could tell her what had happened now. She still treated me like a 12-year-old for starters. She'd be mortified if she knew what I had done. I kicked my clothes under the bed. I didn't want to see them, the memory of my intimacy with Luke invoking further shame. It was no fairy tale moment, as I had imagined. Indeed, it was over before it began. Tugging my clothes to one side, he had bitten my shoulder as his excitement mounted, and I had held on to the cold, hard table, shocked and bewildered as he took control. Afterwards, the awkwardness between us was crippling, our professions of love a tainted memory. I had fixed my clothes, Luke checking his watch as he told me I should hurry home. My fold-up bicycle could have fitted in the boot of his car, but I was too embarrassed to ask for a lift. We were okay, weren't we? Once again, I found myself wondering what I had done wrong. I lay in bed, listening to the wind creeping through the old fireplace, staring at my mobile phone. After 10 minutes of willing Luke to text, I took things into my own hands. It was a one-line text in the hope of further communication. Good night. Love you. XX. But no response was returned. 30 minutes later, I pulled back the covers, wishing I could have a bath to ease the physical discomfort. Pacing the floor, I wished my sister were here to comfort me. I missed her so much it hurt. It had been so lovely earlier in the week, when we'd met up in town for my 16th birthday dinner. But a pizza restaurant was hardly the place to bare my soul. I touched my sunflower necklace, trying to comfort myself. I had Luke now. We were a couple. I would never be alone again. Lifting my feet onto the chair, I hugged my knees, waiting for a reply.
Chapter 32. Alex, 2017. After my conversation with Luke, everything I did was on autopilot. Leaving the pub, finding my key and sliding it into the hotel room door, even getting undressed. I didn't remember anything, because all my attention was on my son. Ever since Luke mentioned his relationship with my wife, suspicion had lurked in the back of my mind. Those blue eyes. They had triggered a spark of recognition. I could not focus on who was telling the truth, because something far more troubling was plaguing my thoughts. I kicked off my duvet, allowing the air conditioning to chill my bare skin. I thought about Emma and Luke together, and imagined our family being ripped apart. I didn't want to believe Luke's story and felt disloyal for its presence in my thoughts. Emma had not mentioned a sexual liaison between them, but there was an undercurrent of tension when she talked about that day. Luke's parting shot was in the forefront of my brain. October 2013. It suggested just one thing. Betrayal. I rose from my bed. There was no point in trying to sleep tonight. I switched on the kettle on the hotel room desk, tearing open the decaf coffee sachet into a cup. As I emptied the capsules of milk, I saw Jamie's face, the child we never thought we could have. Our fertility problems had consumed our marriage, and the strain on our relationship had been immense. It was nature, part of the driving need to reproduce. But it was my fault, not Emma's. My weakness. I thought back to when she fell pregnant.
It had felt like our marriage had been given a reprieve. We would have done anything to make it work. She had gained weight, turned her back on her eating disorder, at least for a while. Wearily, I took a sip of coffee, briefly closing